Off the Ball Breakfast.
Honestly, I'm always fascinated by those things, you know. Pat Kenny could be walking around and he could be unbelievable at Normal Hill, but he would never have tried it.
Who?
Pat Kenny.
All right.
Anyone? You!
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
This week on Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors, how a Danish wonder kid nearly ended up at Liverpool, and how the team of the 80s could have won even more. Michael Ledger's proposed move to Merseyside could have altered the European football landscape, but why did the deal ultimately collapse? Find out on this week's Sliding Doors. Subscribe now in your OTB football podcast to not miss an episode. Coming to you for free each and every Monday.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball.
With Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the IRFU.
This is News Talk.
Do not adjust your sets. It's 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. It's Off the Ball on News Talk. It is Adrian with you for the next little while, alive. Sunday Paper Review in the company of Cliona Foley and Rory Keane coming your way. The Sunday Paper Review and Off the Ball brought to you by Optimum Nutrition. We're delighted to team up with Optimum Nutrition, the world's number one performance nutrition brand, as they launched their new global campaign, The Optimum Advantage. With over 35 years at the top of performance nutrition, trusted by the world's best athletes and a growing partnership with the IRFU, Optimum Nutrition are right at the heart of Irish rugby. Right at the heart of our paper review today are Cliona Foley, sports writer. Cliona, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
And Rory Keane, the rugby correspondent for the Irish Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday. Rory, how are you?
Very good, happy to be here.
The Irish Daily Mail, the Mail on Sunday, boldly proclaims from the back page today, bring on England. Bold is the word, I think. Farrell's excited by trip to Twickenham after the win over Italy. It's not necessarily the tone of the rest, but that is where we're going with the Mail on Sunday. And then Mark Gallagher writes underneath, the news confirmed by Pádraig Joyce after the Galway game yesterday. Veteran Paul Conroy returns to the Galway squad. This was our own Jonathan Higgins in conversation with Pádraig Joyce after their game, their draw with Kerry yesterday. He's back for a year, Joyce said of Conroy. He admitted the 36-year-old, he'll be 37, I think, in a couple of months, is back, former player of the year. Big boost for Galway. The Sunday Independent goes escape to victory. Ireland survive Italy onslaught. And a great picture of Robert Balakun diving for the line there to get that try. Brilliant offload by Stuart McCluskey yesterday. Farrell remains positive as Crowley makes number 10 bid, writes Rory O'Connor. The Sunday Times, meanwhile, goes clinging on. Ireland pushed the limit by superb Italy. Farrell takes satisfaction from gritty defence at the death. Ireland 20, Italy 13 was the score at the Aviva yesterday. A ball of steel goes the Sunday World with that picture again of Robert Balakun. Farrell hails Ireland's courage after seeing off gutsy Italians to seal a nervy win at the Aviva. And England fend off United is the story by Kevin Palmer here. Thomas Tuchel signed a new contract with England after receiving an approach for a move to Manchester United, which was long spoken about there, and plenty more inside the Sunday World, including more from John Aldridge and others. The Sun goes, Rob score Faz to be the best. If you get it. 7-point win for Italy, writes Neil Reardon there. And then Spurs dig at ex-boss Frankie Spanky, new boy Igor, to bring organisation, intensity and a competitive edge. They talk about a clear plan. In a bit of a dig at poor old Thomas Frank, as if the week couldn't get any worse for him, writes Martin Lipton inside. The Sunday Mirror has Raheem Sterling, no more blues. He's gone to Feyenoord and win for Mansfield. A little corner of the rugby up there. Rob, a selfie-made star. And the People is about the Stags. Mansfield celebrate greatest result in their history. etc., etc. And I will just make a quick mention before we go to our panel today that both the Sunday Independent and the Sunday Times have gone for rugby pictures in the front. We are Rugby Nation, I jokingly said earlier on, but the front pages of the papers today played out Close Encounter in Dublin. Cormac is a Chukwu facing off with his Italian counterpart on the Sunday Independent, and then it's that photograph of Robert Balakoon that has definitely caught a lot of the editor's eyes on the front of the Sunday Times. We're not Rugby Nation, is that what you're saying? That
oh, geez, that's a nice, polarising
nice,
one.
Nice
to be careful now, Adrian.
To begin with. So, I'd mentioned earlier in the news round that we were sort of in a situation where it's very tight to deadlines, not a huge amount of considered pieces, a lot of reporting on the game. But I think kind of the main takeaway here, there was a few players that impressed, there were some who didn't, and we are kind of locked in this never-ending loop of who should play 10. There's some praise for Andy Farrell for the changes that he made in advance of the game. There's some praise for Andy Farrell about the changes that he made within the game. But overall, if you come back from all of that, maybe a sense of whether this is the new level of this team or whether we'll ever get back to the levels of 2 years ago. Discuss.
Oh, there we go.
Nice, easy one there.
It was hard yesterday. It was one of those reports where, you know, the intro changed about 17 times in the second half, and it's hard to kind of sit back and think about it when you're on the deadline, and you have to get down to get quotes and all that. But having slept on it and thought a bit more about it today, I'd be a bit more optimistic about the future.
Okay.
There's a couple of quotes that jumped out at me. There was one Bernard Jackman quoting Eddie Jones on a podcast, saying like, Farrell, very blunt, like Farrell is searching for answers in the middle of a rebuild, and that's what's happening at the moment. Like, I think there was no shock yesterday with what happened. Like, Ireland, we know Ireland have been on this decline, Italy are on the rise, so they're going to meet in the middle, and that's what happened yesterday.
Yeah,
so I think like it is a team in a rebuild, but yeah, it was a patchy performance. It was there strewn a lot of the same issues, but like, I think it would have been very easy for him after Paris to kind of double down and go at the old reliables, to kind of be very conservative in selection. But he gave Izajuku a run, he gave Balakoon a run. You know, he didn't have to give Edwin Odrogbu a debut off the bench. Didn't have to start Craig Casey. He was under feeling a bit of heat after, you know, the fourth big heavy defeat from a tier one, and he gave them a go. And a lot of them, even Sam Prendergast, these guys, Jamie Osborne, we kind of forget Tommy O'Brien, who wasn't playing yesterday. They're all learning on the job. And my kind of philosophy is, if the team is in a bit of a dip and they're trying to rebuild themselves and rebuild their identity and tactically change, and if they, you know, if they're in a bit of a dip, but if it bottoms out and next year they go on an upward curve and they head for Australia at the next World Cup, that's great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, I think we've won enough Six Nations.
It is. Like, for both of you, and like you from a point of view have been at the Ireland press conferences and talking to the coaches and the players, and Cliona, from you, from your experience as well, like there's always that reluctance on behalf of a team to acknowledge, like, whatever way you want to describe it, it's been called a decline, a regression, a rebuild. They just generally don't really want to engage in that type of language. And that's what's playing out here with Ireland.
Absolutely. Like, but it's that thing of, like, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, Ireland don't have a God-given right to be up on the top table, but they've been up there for about, between the Joe Schmidt years and Andy Farrell, they've been up there for a long time. They've punched above their weight. At the moment, it just feels like it's kind of a perfect storm of a lot of frontliners kind of
injuries.
Getting a bit of, yeah, injuries.
Older age, yeah, everything. The only thing, I suppose I'd look at it yesterday and say, and I think Shane Horgan in the Sunday Times sums it up best when he says, for any neutral watching the game, you'd be more excited about the Italy performance than Ireland's. And that's true. Like, you have to accept that's true. And it was shocking what happened to the scrum in the second half. Like, it's something we thought we'd sorted out, and it comes back to haunt us again. Like, there were ups and downs in it as well. Like, I just think it's the reality now. And I also think, like, I was laughing. Look at Henry Arundel with England the week before. He scores he scores three tries and then he comes on and gets two yellow cards. Young players, like I was comparing Sam Prendergast to the American figure skater during the week who absolutely lost it in the final, Ilya Mitlyamina. And these guys are in their early 20s. Like it does take years, I think, of hard work and experience, just experience in the heat of battle to get these things right. Prendergast had an absolute nightmare yesterday. There's no doubt about it. And what was striking about it was that his hands actually, you could see the nerves in his hands. Like he was past these loopy balls. There wasn't speed on the ball even from his hand. And you just have a bad day, but that doesn't mean you write them off, you know? Clearly, he won't be in the driving seat the next day, I don't think. There's a consensus amongst all of the reports today that he won't start the next day. And that's okay, you know? When you see social media and you see the reactions of some people on social media, it's just mind-blowing.
Well, he comes off yesterday, we were discussing just before came on air there, he comes off and Crowley comes on and there's how would you describe it? There was a cheer.
The noise went up big.
So what was that? What was that for?
I think it was Crowley. I think it was kind of okay. Here comes the.
It was the Munster fans. Is that what you're saying, Rory?
all the lads who came up from Cove to see a dog go. It's there,
yeah.
But I remember back in the day with Sexton O'Gara, we used to call it Rajcam. Like every time Sexton missed a penalty or something, the camera would go to O'Gara in the stand, and that's the way it was. And we had that for years with them, even.
Yeah.
Like, you know, were they cheering one going off and one going on? But now that's the vibe I got anyway.
Okay.
But, you know, but like, there were a couple of groans.
On,
when you missed
on TV, it sounded like it was more a cheer for Crowley coming on. Definitely.
Okay.
That's what it sounded like.
Give us your, if you're Andy Farrell now and you're Paul O'Connell, Simon Easby, and the coaching staff, and you're sitting down this morning and you've rewatched the game and you're going to dissect this thing and you need to set up your week as to what you need to take on. Give us what are the top three things on their page when they sit down to go, here are the things that, like, forget about the great rebuild that we need to get right for next weekend. What, on the basis of yesterday?
Scrum, number one, which isn't an easy fix. I actually bumped into Shane Byrne at the media lift before going down to the press conference, the worst lift in Ireland. Like, it was like, it's like the lift in The Shining. It just gives journalists nightmares. It's so slow if you're trying to get down. But, I digress. But, the fellow was in the front row with Leinster and Ireland and the Lions, and he said, his take was Ireland won't face a better scrum again this year. Like, the Italians have proper scrum. That's kind of England are still going to bring it with Ellis Genge and all that, but it's not that's not an easy fix, especially when you're down three loose heads and all that. So that's something. Like, I think Tadhg Furlong will come back into it, but even then, geez, when he came on at halftime, and as Farrell said, he got his wings. Like, it's so rare to see that.
Yeah, popped up in the air.
That's something. Like, I think survival will be the thing in Twickenham, because I think everyone remembers poor Tom Court, was it Patrick's weekend, when he came on and got, the poor lad got turned upside down, you know, for half the afternoon when Mike Ross went off. But the scrum,
number one, 10, did you say?
10, yeah. I would be, as Cliona said, I'd be.
So you're hoping that, right, faith in Crowley, that's going to pay off. And do you go Prendergast in the 23 in that environment? Or does Harry Byrne come into the picture?
Jeez, there's a question. Now. But it would be
good. Harry Byrne's a better kicker at the moment.
That's it. That's well. You need to be kicking. You need to be hitting you need to be good off the tee, especially in a game like Twickenham. Yeah. But it would be good as well to just give Harry Byrne just a crack at it. Get him a bit battle hardened and get him a bit exposed. Like, I find this whole debate a bit. You know, is it one or the other? I love the fact that there's two lads.
You need to have two or three, right?
But then we're also waiting for
But you also have to have somebody to control a game.
They're playing themselves out of it almost.
When you looked at Scotland yesterday, like the 9 and 10 were in perfect sync. I know Russell's a genius, or he's so mercurial, anything can go wrong. But like that little flick pass, when he set his man in no look pass with the flick for the try, was just sensational. But they control the game, and that's the thing about the 10, is that we need to have two, possibly three, but we also have to have somebody who's at the top of their game or is building confidence. And that's, I think, that's just what's happened to just Prendergast. He's just lost his confidence. You could see it. Yeah. I mean, the first kick, you know, I mean, that was.
So we're saying scrum is number one. John Fogarty, we'll take that away, fix that. We'll see you on Wednesday. Selection for number 10, tick.
Yeah.
And what's third on the list?
Jeez, third. I think just kind of, I think maybe the back row. Get that kind of balance right. I felt yesterday, I don't know, like he went for it.
Doris to 8 nearly would have to be the call again, wouldn't it?
I think Doris will go back to
8. He's out of position.
I think Doris will go back to 8. 6 is a huge call, and then does Van de Vleer come out of the cold to 23? But then I think Nick Timoney's been brilliant the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, Tyburn comes back to 6, give Timoney a rattle at 7 and have Doris back at 8. Yeah. That's another one, so.
Yeah.
That's why they get paid the big bucks.
It's a weird thing. Like, you'd look at them yesterday and say, do you take confidence from Scotland's performance, or do you absolutely think, oh my God, that was the worst thing ever now, because England are coming, now we're going to Twickenham and they have the world and his mother to prove wrong. Do you know what I mean? So that's the scary thing. I think that was the worst thing to happen yesterday. It wasn't how Ireland played, but how badly England played and we're facing them next. I think that is. But then also you look at Scotland, and I know they have an Indian sign. The Calcutta Cup is a bizarre, it's a bizarre how they do it every single time. But like, how they took on England yesterday showed absolutely, they were fearless against them, but they were controlled by the halfbacks, and that is the key thing, and that's where we just don't have stability there.
Well, we've explained away the scrum there a bit too quickly, because scrum was eaten alive for the second game in a row, says Rory Connor in the Sunday Independent today. And Bernard Jackman follows that up with, credit goes to Italy for their improvement, but I've to temper that with the fact that Ireland have come backwards. Farrell got the intent from his players that he was critical about in Paris, and we showed plenty of character, but the reality is we have no scrum and not enough accuracy in our game at the moment. No scrum from Bernard Jackman, who I think people would consider to be one of the leading pundits, particularly in that area of the game in the country at the minute. It's an indictment. Hard to turn that around in a week, albeit your point accepted that, you know, Italy's scrum is one of the more dominant ones.
Yeah.
We were a few balls in the air. Yeah, that was one plus early on. We didn't stick to the same tactic for the whole game. That's another plus. But that's what you would have expected the week before. I could not understand what they were doing the week before, constantly going to the air when they couldn't win a ball in the air. So it is. It swings and roundabouts at the moment. But the bottom line is, you know, someone said a few weeks ago they should be third in Six Nations. They're not showing that they're good enough to be third in Six Nations.
Oh, we're fifth
at
in it at the minute in Scotland. They're top of the pile, Rory.
Top of the table, for a few hours anyway. They're back.
It's going to be interesting. But that is the consensus generally. Like, you know, they're virtually... all the papers feel the same way. And I thought McCluskey was the man of the match, not just because of the NFL pass and all the layoffs and everything, but actually defensively he was brilliant, and he was brilliant right to the very end. He was covering back, and that element of, like, defensively again, they held out brilliantly. They've done that a few times this year where they've been absolutely put to the pin in their collars, and they have held on defensively. That's the one thing I take from it, is that the organisational skills are there. You bring in whoever you bring in off the bench, they're still doing the same job defensively. But they're definitely not on all cylinders.
No. This confidence thing is the C word is mentioned across all the papers today, and I don't know how that's not a thing that you fix in a week. Even the Italy players in the press conference afterwards were talking about, well, we knew Ireland rather low ebb from a confidence point of view. I mean, that's a thing that we'll have to work on for a while. Let's talk about the shank, as Andy Farrell called it afterwards. Right? Let's address it and acknowledge that it happened and then move on from it. Just one of those things.
Yeah.
Happens.
Just, yeah.
Like a bit, brain fart is
Billy Burns is the...
poor Billy Burns in Cardiff.
Billy.
It's just a thing. Like, it's common enough, because I think they're just trying to get every inch they can out of the kick, but sometimes just, you know, just kick it into the stand.
Well, we were looking at it, and I was like, geez, has he done that deliberately just to end the game?
Yes.
Because, like,
it's a weird end to the match, isn't it?
Bonus points,
But what are we saying? Just not one to linger on. These things happen, and you know, I read. I'm guilty of trawling through the player ratings a little bit too deep. But I found myself going across all the papers today, and then I went into the 42.ie just to see what Gavin Casey had to say, and he gave Prendergast a 6 and Crowley Prendergast a 5 and Crowley a 6.
Yes.
And Crowley was docked a point on the basis of the kick.
That's a bit harsh. Saving the day.
But he didn't do anything stunning, but he just did the simple things right. It looked to me as if Prendergast as well, they were forcing this thing of going to the wings, and when it wasn't on early on, it was like, you know, they'd been told that's the plan, now we'll move it wide and then get it out there, but the passing wasn't good enough to put it out there, you know. He hit one lovely pass, but other than that, everything was a bit slow, wasn't it?
the player ratings, Shane McGrath gets them, and that's the hospital pass from the editor, is it?
Straight away, having to do it straight on the button when you haven't seen any replays very often sometimes either.
It's just so, and as you said, like you have to, like you always like when you're doing ratings, half the time you're buried into the laptop and you're, you know, but it's so hard to critically analyse, as you said, 23 players and so many moving parts, yeah. But some of them are obvious, like McCluskey, Ballacoon are excellent, but yeah.
There's not too many, like eight's been dished out today. It's like the better players, like in your own paper, Osborne's getting a 7, Ballacoon 7, McCluskey 7. But beyond that, it's fives and Clarkson a 4 and, you know.
You'd have to say, Adrian, like probably the 7s, 8s and 9s were... If you're in Italy, of course.
Sorry, I missed this, and you know when you're at a game, you get a very different sense of, or even in the media zone, maybe where people are having that bit more of a chat, like you can miss what's going on. I wasn't too bowled over by Italy, I have to say. I feel as if we're leaning on how great Italy were to make ourselves feel better. They were grand. There was periods of the game where they definitely came into it and looked quite good, and their scrum was obviously far superior thing to ours.
Yeah, but I thought their attacking formations looked much more dangerous than ours. We were very flat, and somebody makes that point today. Is it Shane Byrne or someone? I think it is Shane Horgan makes that point again. Whereas Italy, I just felt were the way they were lined up was much more creative
and the more flair about them, especially like, and even the, like, you know,
more
the,
speed.
A lot's been made of the fact they've only got two professional clubs, but like Garbisi's at Toulon, Brex, who was missing yesterday, is at Toulon, Menoncello is going to Toulouse.
They're missing the brilliant fullback, Capuzzo.
It's like Randy Farrell said on Thursday, said this is the best Italian team to come to Dublin ever, and I don't think it was, you know, reaching for the platitudes. It is genuinely, like, sounding like a party politician now, kind of. But they are generally a team on the rise. It's generally a very good side.
Shut up, Adrian. You're talking rubbish. You're allowed to say that. That's absolutely fine. Right, we'll get you a couple of scores from the GA in just a moment. But in terms of where they, you know, like we're saying, in terms of the stock, let's say these players are, you know, we're dealing stocks and shares here. Jamie Osborne is on the rise. You know, like, I mean, he's long back from injury, a big shoulder injury, and looks very comfortable in that position. Like, to the point where we suddenly have brilliant depth at 15.
Absolutely. McKenson, Keenan.
And he's now the banker there, at least at number 3, if not further up. Ballacoon has moved himself into has to start next week.
Because we always knew the X factor he had, but I thought he just did a lot of the really, you know, fielding eye balls,
exactly,
tackling, did
all the even kind of gritty stuff really well. For Ulster, sometimes, you know, you think just do the simple thing first.
Yeah.
And yesterday he did the simple things and he did the really good stuff really well. I thought he was really impressive yesterday.
McCluskey's a banker again for midfield. Ringrose?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well,
where's his stock at?
Well, I didn't think he had a great game yesterday.
He's one of the frontliners who are maybe running out of road.
He's so physical. Who do you put in ahead of him for England?
Yeah.
That's the thing, I suppose.
Well, that's the question. Like, what's the answer?
I'd always have been a big fan of Tom Farrell now, but I wonder, is it McCluskey, Farrell, midfield? Is that just a bit too loose? Like, that would be just offload central. So I wonder, do you need kind of...
You're veering into Schmidt territory worries.
Yeah. You were saying outside in the office about McCluskey's, like, I mean, with the offload, the over the head.
Yeah.
What was better, by the way, that or the Russell flick?
It was no look. He just did that. He kept his head straight. It was brilliant. He fixed your man.
He wouldn't get away with this stuff under Joe Schmidt.
I said outside, I remember, like, I was at the game 10 years, geez, I feel old now, it was 10 years ago at Twickenham when Joe was sort of rebuilding the team after the 2015 World Cup, and he gave McCluskey his debut, and I think Van de Fleer, I think Dalton Delan as well got his debut.
Right.
But I can't remember the quote off the top of my head, but he was asked about McCluskey in the post-match, and it was like two lines, and it was like something along the lines of, he was loose enough, and I don't think we saw him again for about 3 years on the international scene. So it's interesting, you know, Farrell kind of gives him that license.
Defensively,
like,
yesterday I thought he was brilliant.
He doesn't get credit, actually. Yeah. Apparently he hates the nickname.
He was brilliant defensively. He hates the nickname.
He hates the nickname, the Banger Bulldozer, because it kind of implies
that's all his game, crash ball
merchant, but there's way more to him. He's probably the most unlucky player in Irish rugby for 10 years, because he was there with Aki, Henshaw, Ringrose, and he's having a bit of an old...
But it's interesting, like, well, I was just saying, he's 33, isn't he?
33,
Here's a guy who hasn't been beaten and beaten and beaten at the international stage every year. And now at 33, he's playing brilliantly, you know. So it just shows you sometimes, I think, the age is irrelevant. It's dependent on playing time. Absolutely, more than anything else.
You get obsessed with you, Thomas Clean, again.
Yeah, we can. And definitely his stock went back up after yesterday.
Barrel threw a few tackles, a few brilliant offloads as well. So we've already established the 9 and 10 that started, stock on the wane, and two to come in that have stock on the rise. Across the front row, the top five are probably all stock on the drop, are they?
Yeah.
Or is there anybody you'd pick out of that?
Wouldn't be surprised if Ronan Keller came in, actually.
For sure.
Just because he's a renowned scrummager. He's wider and kind of more powerful.
And was part of that impact off the bench yesterday as well.
Because Sheehan, for me, just looks like a fellow, a bit like Tyburn. He's probably looks a bit tired.
I think.
There's not a zip.
Well. Yeah,
even when he tried the quick tap. Mother God.
And we've no...
And Clarkson, like, you look at some... Like, they're very... Clarkson is very inexperienced, isn't he? Like,
you kind of forget.
How inexperienced he is.
There's a rake of them in there now that have less than...
Could you go with a full new front row the next day? Injuries notwithstanding.
They're already
Tom O'Toole was singled out for a bit of praise afterwards.
That's an interesting one. Now they've been looking at that, and apparently if Farrell had his way, that's where he'd be playing for Ulster, and then Ulster go in and sign Angus Bell, the best loose head in the world from Australia.
Okay. So he's not getting the experience up there that he needs.
Yeah, like trying to learn to draw. Like, it's like going left and right handed. Apparently, it's not an easy switch. Like, so
what about second row then, McCarthy and Ryan?
I thought Ryan did okay. Yeah. McCarthy still needs to. I think he needs to be having more impact, or at least making more yards. I think that's the thing. He's competitive always, sometimes dangerously so.
So Ryan is in, and we've a question mark on the other side.
Yeah.
Tyke Byrne, you didn't mention him for the back row. Maybe could he come in?
Potentially at six, but I thought Izajuku was quietly.
He was good in the line-out as well.
In the second row at Twickenham. Are you holding firm with McCarthy and Ryan?
I think McCarthy. I think McCarthy and Ryan. Yeah, I think
the
scrummaging is especially, you know, and he's going to need big lumps.
He's going to need big lumps, that's true.
And then the back row, is it Chukwu, Doris, Conan?
I think that'll change around. I think that was horses.
Yeah, I think Doris is better at eight. Yeah. I just think let him back at eight for a start, because he just doesn't seem to impose himself on the game at the moment.
It's like seven is like, especially against England. England have about four open sides.
It's scary.
You're going to need a guy there who's going to get down and dirty in the breakdown, you know.
A lot of selection suggestions coming through here on YouTube as well, that keep them coming in, and keep them in some way that we might be able to actually read them, I'd say. I was struck as well by the Italian defenders. Was it Menoncello for the McCluskey offload, which is a thing of beauty? He seemed to be standing sort of in a position of, do you know, like the dad teasing the 5-year-old kid and just sort of holding them off. It looked like as if Menoncello was sort of like, I'm not going to get this ball off you, so I'll just watch what's
and
going on.
And he's no slouch, Menoncello.
No.
Yeah.
I was actually in the Examiner last night that said McCluskey was unglamorous but effective.
I thought he was brilliant.
He was quite glamorous.
He kind of provided the big box, the highlights reel moments, really, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant. Yeah.
So what's the... We've sat down and we've gone through our... Here's what needs to change for next weekend. We've gone through our selections and we've a few question marks, but by and large, we've opted to make a few changes for next weekend as well. So, obviously, with the Scotland performance sort of in mind and the England performance maybe more particularly, how are we feeling confidence-wise?
Yeah,
well, as I said, I'd be scared because we're not playing well, and they've just had their bottom spanked, and they will, you know, in Twickenham, they will just be. I mean, it was a comedy. So I think Sunday Times have it a comedy of errors. They described what went on yesterday. Ellis Genge, I don't know how he didn't get a card the week before. How did he not get a card the week before for the headbutt?
But
I wasn't sorry yesterday when I saw him making that fumble. But like everything went wrong, and then I was reading somewhere today. One of them says. That England had they had a study done on, you know, the efficacy of drop kicks. Well, they got an example of, you know, how not to do it. And Ford, who was brilliant the week before, terrible yesterday. Like, That's just the nature.
They're trying to force the game at that point anyway.
Yeah, they were.
Like, geez, if that drop goal goes off and it goes over the bar, like, suddenly there's not much between them. I can't remember what the exact score was at that time, but...
Yeah. But Scotland were just fearless. I mean, they were fantastic.
Yeah, if Townsend could play England every week, he'd be coached here.
He could end up losing his job at the end of the Six Nations, which is... We had Tom English on during the week. One of the ones who's been asking a lot, you know, are you the right man for the job? And, like, it's not an easy thing to have to ask somebody, but legitimate, all the same. And it was a perfectly legitimate conversation when we spoke to Tom English on Wednesday morning to ask him, is this fella going to see out the Six Nations? And it's a bit of a sense that he will, but possibly not much longer than that. So
it's remarkable. I mean,
it's the optics of it. Yeah, that whole Newcastle thing as well, the optics are dreadful. Like,
I never understand that in Robbie Roy, where contracts are negotiated mid-season, which is really strange to me. Any other sport, why it doesn't happen, and also that people say in high performance jobs or management jobs say I'm going there next year. It's a very odd thing, isn't it?
Like, to try and get them all done before the Six Nations, just because of the stress of it. Like, to try and get them all signed off, which is mad midway through a season.
A couple of texts to wrap up this lot. Razorblade on YouTube says second row should be McCarthy and a dog boat. I think I'd be really interested to see that. And a couple of...
I think a dog boat, not ready for that yet. I don't think he is. I think
they're
he will be.
Him, aren't they?
I think he will be. Yeah. That's why they're managing him so carefully. Mm. But I don't think he might not be up to the pace of it yet. But like, there's great potential there. And just on... We were just talking outside. Just on how unlucky you can be. I was... scrolling to Twitter last night and I saw something in French. And Carberry's after doing his ACL. I mean... How unlucky.
Very unfortunate, Joe, for the rest of the season. WhatsApper on 087-9180-180 asks if it's time for a change of management. The results of the last year have been terrible, and the result of refusal to blood new players since the last World Cup is coming back to bite us in the ass. I mean, that has changed now, partly to do with injury and then partly because he's just opted to tweak things up. And then another WhatsApp in was at Adrian, who said that Crowley was given the keys and didn't take his chance. He won the Six Nations in the following autumn when he was on the pitch. Ireland were winning. He was discarded none the same. Following Six Nations, he was again back up. His confidence has suffered and he hadn't been given a fair crack of the whip since for Ireland. Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to get it now.
Yep.
And just on the rugby agent, David Kelly has an interesting piece in the Sunday Independent, just about, we're generally talking about it anyway always, but social media and the abuse that players take and all the rest. But the IRFU have actually engaged services of a company called Signify, and they have a service called Threat Matrix, and they can watch the sort of stuff coming in into players' social media and try and cancel it or report it or get to it. Like, I even saw last night already, you know, I just saw one, you know, horrendous racist tool make a comment, you know, after yesterday's game, and you think, God almighty, the knuckle draggers are with us yet. But it's interesting, and that's all this number 10, you know, is being played out against that as well, which is very difficult on young players. You know, you have to have sympathy for them.
I can't say much about it because it's in an embargoed piece for tomorrow, but Andy Farrell is actually very good on that, about Prendergast and Crowley and talking about keyboard warriors and all that. So
break that embargo. We're here for you. Loads still to come. We're going to get into the implications of Ireland withdrawing against Israel in more light relief in a few moments, and we have other stuff to come as well. So off the ball and news talk on this Sunday afternoon. Adrian with you for the Sunday Paper Review, and we're here with Lena Foley and Rory Keane. We're going to turn our attention to the soccer of sorts, and it's front page news in the Sunday Times today. Gardaí raised concerns with FAI over Israel match, writes Jennifer Bray. Gardaí have raised concerns about policing and upcoming football match between Ireland and Israel in the middle of the presidency of the EU, which is an extra wrinkle obviously to all this stuff, which will bring significant security demands. And the piece goes on to say that senior government figures have said that where the game is played is not a political decision and should be up to the relevant sporting and security bodies. And I can tell you, having read all the pieces on this today, that it ain't my problem is a regular theme, no matter which of the stakeholders that are referred to in this. Dion Fanning's piece in the Sunday Independent is probably among the best of them. Reality meets rhetoric, but FAI mistakes pale in comparison. Loads to this. Dion writes that when the draw was made in Brussels, the FAI president Paul Cook and the CEO David Carell exited without speaking to the media. It was left to manager Hamer Helgrimson to articulate a position on behalf of Irish football. This is not Helgrimson's job, but in the absence of anyone else, he had to answer questions on the subject. That's very much one that people are you know, Dion says it was a failure of their responsibilities to leave it to the manager, as in the FAI of the team, to take a position
their
rather
job,
than come out themselves. So they had the statement and they put the statement out, but really we wanted to hear more from officialdom.
Yeah,
but surely that's their job, to speak on behalf of the FAI. That's not his job. His job is to speak on behalf of the team. Mm. It's bizarre that they didn't do that.
Why didn't they?
But a press release was sent out straight afterwards as well. They didn't, because clearly they didn't want to face any hard questions. You know, it's just. Like we've just, like we said, you could almost guess we were going to get Israel. It was just, you know, sitting there, you knew it was going to happen. And clearly they did as well, because I bet that press release was prepared in advance. There's varying views on it. Look, Mark Gallagher says he has some sympathy with the FAI, because for once, he said they when they were mandated by their General Assembly to, you know, send that particular rule about clubs operating in illegal settlements, they did that, and it wasn't supported at UEFA level. I think Dion is making the point that UEFA were one of the bodies that helped bail out the FAI, so it puts them in a very invidious position.
So we need to tip the cap to them and
ditch
our...
Shane McGrath.
Positions.
Yeah. Shane McGrath is very strong in... people would be interested in his piece, because he's saying that, like, a lot of people are talking about two sides of their mouth, basically, here, and he particularly has a go at Sinn Féin, because he says that this has happened, that, you know, they wanted... They're all for, you know, boycotting the game, but they... this is just days after the party's cynical, shameful decision to vote against Ireland's support for an EU loan desperately needed by Ukraine. And he says, you know, that he says in Ireland, you know, the whole Israel-Palestine thing, that there's been two, you know, his view of it is that there's been a very simple orthodoxy here, you know, Palestine good, Israel bad, or whatever. I'm sorry, we all watch the TV. Yeah. We know what happened. We've seen 70,000 people
every day for about
murdered,
18 months.
You know, in cold blood. If there is a boycott of that game, or if there is, I will be there. I'll say that much. You know, and I think any right-thinking person will wonder. I've said it here before many times. I don't understand how Israel are playing in international sport at the moment.
Mm. When you said I'll be there, what do you mean?
If there's a peaceful demonstration, I'll be at it.
Yeah.
Sorry. But the interesting thing is that this has happened, and Shane McGrath raises it. It has happened already with Irish basketball, and I had huge sympathy for the women's basketball team. This happened to them a couple of years ago, and what is really interesting about that, and I followed it very closely because I'm interested in basketball. When Ireland made an objection, said they wouldn't play it. It was a Eurobasket game for the women's senior women's team. They said they wouldn't play it in Israel. They were worried safety-wise they got it moved. They were accused, the players were accused of being anti-Semitic by one of the Israeli players. And as a result, the players themselves decided that they would take some action on that.
Which was to
not shake hands and to stay at their bench when the national anthems were on, right? But like the FAI now, Basketball Ireland went and played the match, and they've since played Israel since again, on the basis that if they didn't, they were going to get fined massively. But nobody took much interest in it. But what really interested me is, and I watched the game live, was that during that game, there was a ticker tape on the side of the court going, "We love Israel." And there were Israeli IDF, there were Israeli soldiers at the Israeli women's training, and a Kalashnikov was put on the side of the court. Really? Now, I'm sorry, you can say there's no politics in sport, but like, that was absolutely blatant to me. Mm. You know, and this, you know, conflating of if you're anti-Israel, you're anti-Jewish. No, I'm not anti-Jewish, but I'm anti-Israeli state. I'm anti-IDF for what they've done to Palestine, innocent people. So this whole issue has come up. I mean, somebody else, Mark makes that point as well about, you know, you can't take politics out of sport anymore, because at that draw last week, he said not only was... the former boxing champion, what's his name?
Vitaly Klitschko.
Klitschko was there as mayor of Kyiv, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
And then who else was there? Wasn't it one of the footballers was there?
Shevchenko
was there as well.
Yeah. Well, it's such a naive, childish viewpoint that sport and politics shouldn't be discussed together. It's often what people use when they kind of want to wriggle the way out of it.
It's the best way to take a stand, Adrian. Like, think there's a picture, there's an inset in Mark's piece here, his brilliant TV column of you know, Jesse Owens, that really iconic picture. Think of Colin Kaepernick. You know, it's a chance to kind of take a stand and make a gesture against something, you know?
Yeah.
You
have to, so they turned up to play the event and then made their stance there.
Yes.
I suppose that's the context of it. And
yes,
people are sort of unsure.
And a couple of them have given the example of Norway playing Israel and them donating the money to one of the charity
Medicine Sans Frontières, I think it was.
Yeah, exactly. So there is a possibility they could still do something, as a gesture even. But I mean, the reality is, if you don't play the game, you're going to get a massive fine and you're going to get threatened. That's what happened to the Irish women's basketball team. And I said at the time, and I still believe it, if it did happen, but I don't think it will happen, you see. Because if they're talking about banning it from future competitions, so that's what happened with FIBA, with the Irish women's basketball team. That's the chance they couldn't take, you know. If you get somebody to pay the fine, you could even get the government to pay the fine.
Absolutely.
If they're going to ban you for future competitions, there's your problem.
Well, Paul Rowan says senior FAI officials are privately warning that boycotting the game could have even more serious repercussions for Ireland. Israel would almost certainly look for heavy sanctions in such a scenario, which could amount to a heavy fine or Ireland getting kicked out of international competitions, losing the right to jointly host the next Euros, where Dublin will have six or seven games, would also be a possibility. They are clearly the sanctions for it. One point that Dion Fanning makes that I hadn't considered, he says about the motion that was passed at the FAI General Assembly last November calling on UEFA to ban Israeli teams from club and international competitions. Dion goes on to say, the motion said they should be removed from competition because they were in breach of two FIFA and UEFA statutes. Ireland have been competing in the same competitions as Israel all this time. They could have refused to take part in any tournament on the basis that they didn't believe Israel's football team should be in the competition, but as others have done, they played on, i.e., we could have had a position on this long before, been drawn alongside them if we really wanted.
I think one of our underage girls teams played Israel against recently as well.
And like, you know, if enough countries were of a mind to do that, they could, of course, band together to get some kind of critical mass where their withdrawal from the tournament would make the thing
pointless. Yeah, strength to numbers.
You know, so there is actually, I know we're all falling over ourselves to say, that's not mine. You deal with that because it's not my call to make. But actually, if the FAI and any of the other associations wanted to put themselves at the centre of a solution, something like that where they can't be, if they could band together to get enough of them. And like, listen,
but
I understand.
There wasn't an appetite for that.
No. There isn't an appetite for it. No, and like any countries who are not in the same group of them will just take the easy path with, they shouldn't be in the tournament, but that's as far as we need to go. Whereas I know that obviously it's on our front door now and we need to decide around that, but it just feels as if this one is looking for a little bit of leadership, and a lot of the pieces, including, I think you mentioned Mark Gallagher's piece earlier on, with a lot of people saying the statement, there needed to be more than the statement, and we're looking for a bit of leadership on it now. So.
And also, it shouldn't have been the Irish manager who was
unfair.
Put in front of the press.
No. The team there is like sport and politics, but I think it boils down to like sport and business and money and things like that. I think that's the bottom line a lot of the time.
Yeah, talk to finances come into it. You're tuned into the Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball. It's brought to you by Optum Nutrition. We're delighted to team up with Optum Nutrition, the world's number one performance nutrition brand, as they launch their new global campaign, The Optimum Advantage, and with over 35 years' experience at the top of performance nutrition, trusted by the world's best athletes, and a growing partnership with the IRFU. Optimum Nutrition are right at the heart of Irish rugby. We're going to turn to the GAA, and particularly some of the coverage around the hurling, and most specifically the comments of Ben O'Connor over the last week, and Michael Foley's piece in the Sunday Times is where we kick this one off. With glare like Roy Keane and strong beliefs, O'Connor is face of GAA, screams the headline here. Cork manager's forthright opinions on the state of the game appeal to fans of all ages, and he's helped hurling gain new levels of attention online. So it's pretty straight talking, Ben O'Connor. Obviously last weekend, about how effectively he wants players to man up, I suppose is the expression that's been used. But some lovely stuff in this Michael Foley piece here, who says the kids are energised by the sudden emergence of a straight-talking sporting figure. Their parents are amused by this Generation Xer coming at his work with the heat of a thousand suns, melting snowflakes.
It's a great line, isn't it?
That was a good line. And he mentions our own Ben Symes, his interview with the Bohemians manager Alan Reynolds during the week, where he talked about, if that's a red card from his own game, we might as well go home. I sound a bit like the Cork hurling manager.
he's caught the side guys very fast, hasn't he?
Yeah. There is something that we love about that, and like we've spoken about it a little bit in the papers over the last weeks, because Kieran McGeaney has been in that category as well, and a couple of others, but just there's something brilliant about the manager who's not been managed to within an inch of his life to say all the right things. And Ben O'Connor if early indications are to go by, we're in for a treat over the, hopefully over the next few years.
Rory is really looking forward to this.
Absolutely. I can almost name that Cork team, the great Cork team he was on in the early 90s.
They were all scam speakers,
weren't they? Yeah, like he played for like Dermot O'Sullivan and John Gardner,
John Logan, Brian
Corcoran. Like I say, that dressing room, I'd say there was, leave your feelings at the door, I'd say, you know. So I'd say that's where he comes with that stock. And even Michael just talking about his dad, Bernie, just sounded like a brilliant character. Like, you know, the quote there was that when he says, from 2005, when he's talking about
I'd
be the kind of person players would listen to for very long. Bernie O'Connor told me in 2005, I'd be too hard on them, the carrot or the stick, if that. The carrot's only good for, I'll leave it up to your imagination. Big stick it is, you know. So that's where, like, he comes from good stock. But it's great, though. As you said, like, you know, geez, with years and years of doing press conferences and chatting to managers and, you know, minders kind of jumping in, and like Ben O'Connor just stares down and tells it as it is.
Well, what's interesting is Dermot Crowe makes the same point in The Independent as well, in his piece about hurling in general, about where hurling should be going at the moment, is this thing that he comes from the club and a county that changed how hurling was done. So they brought in, I mean, under Bernie, Newton Chandran brought in this small hand passing game, this possession game. You know, there was a conviction about his father, as we can see, whatever about stylistically, there was a conviction about how you should play the game that was, you know, irrefutable. And it's clear that Ben O'Connor has come to this management job with the same thing, which is, we will do it my way and I'm not going to listen. And it's very interesting, Mick Foley's line on it. He says, the nature of outside noise will suit O'Connor, given the genuine belief driving many of his criticisms. It will be almost irrelevant whether becoming a magnet for any attention is a deliberate ploy while the Cork players quietly continue the rehabilitation work after the horrors of last year's All-Ireland final. In other words, I would say it is. Yeah, I would say, and it's a very clever one it is. Yeah. But also, he has the strength of character, clearly, to be able to manage it as well. And that is, I'm going to, like, he was wrong. His thing about the
tap
on the head was wrong. Under the rules, even if it's accidental, it's a yellow card. And actually, Dermot Crowe makes that point and makes the point that that Patrick Horgan, who was on RT that night, and he was famously sent off for it was more than a tap of the head, in fairness, on Limerick's Paddy O'Brien in the Munster final in 2000, I think it was 13, and got sent off for it. But even he was saying, no, he's wrong about that rule. But it's his conviction and his passion, and as Michael says, even, you know, the memes that were suddenly hopping up last week, Ben O'Connor when asked if he'd like oat milk, you know, there were all these brilliant memes came up. It's just his passion. It's very Cork, isn't it? It's like, you know, we'll do it. It's in the blood. It's our way. And as I said, there's a great line, as a descendant from the literal cradle of modern hurling, anything O'Connor has to say on the state of sport is also worth considering, you know. And his point about bringing in the runner, being allowing a runner behind the field, like, some of what he said may have been wrong, but what Mick Foley is saying is basically coming from where he comes from, coming from where Cork are coming from now and the kind of leadership they lead, it's well worth keeping, apart from him being a breath of fresh air in terms of management speak, it's well worth listening to what he has to say.
If we zoom out a little bit to that wider point about, like, you know, listen, it's a very attractive sort of attribute to have on his part, and like
we love it.
If we go for the wider point, which there's two pieces that I want to mention here. One of them from the Mick Foley piece, where he talks about his overall point about the state of hurling itself is not wrong. It feels almost inevitable that a group styled on the Football Review Committee will be gathered in the coming years to address hurling's problems in a similar way, and the Hurling Development Committee obviously might be.
They're already looking at it.
So just on that wider point, right, because, like, I do feel that hurling particularly is in this constant existential debate around, like, is the game gone soft?
It's a superior game.
So, well, let's scroll back to 1934, over to Dermot Crowe's piece in the Sunday Independent, because I think this is the context that we need here today. P.D. Meegan, who is Paddy Meegan, who I believe, and I really should have looked this up before coming on air, was the first person to have done a live sporting commentary on Irish radio.
Oh, really?
And as we're in the 100th year of Irish radio, I think that it's important to mention that.
He went
also by the name Carberry, known, Dermot Crowe says here. So, 1934, he expressed his concern about tactical and other innovations that were diluting the game's physicality. And then he quotes Paddy Meegan here, discipline, speed, Science are the order of the day, he wrote. Have we overstepped the mark, he asks. Are we catering for a diminutive race of men? Are the magnificent six-foot giants wider shouldered and of surpassing power being elbowed out in the recent evolution of the game? It can be said now with the benefit of hindsight, writes Dermot Crowe here, that Carberry's fears were misplaced, but they have been replaced by a fresh set of new fears that the game is being tampered with and wrapped in cotton wool. So there is this, like, and actually speaking to Arthur O'Dea, who himself is in the middle of writing a book that'll come out in the not too distant future, I believe, he would talk about this stuff a lot because over the course of that book, he's researching stuff from 50, 60, 70 years ago. And it turns out this is this, you know, a slightly different lens from the Ireland out half debate, but sort of the same doom cycle of, is the game gone? And it turns out it's not.
Well, it's not. And if, and I mean, in response to that Carberry question of how many years ago, you just have to say one word, which is Limerick. I mean, talk about six-footers with wide shoulders and power. Yeah. You know what I mean? And under Limerick, the game became so physical, and the game has become so physical, and the Kilkenny team before them as well. I don't think there's any fear of that. I think occasionally you will get, this, you said, this existential debate. There is... Dermot says, you know, there is a case to be made for cleaning up some aspects of hurling, and he talks about it here because he says the disciplinary change that the new football rules made have had an interesting case. Like, there were only in 2025 there were just 23 disciplinary cases arising from the senior into football. That was a dramatic reduction of 57 cases, right? And he says that was, there was 51 hurlers suspended, but there's a big argument on hurling about this, and even about that this hold being held by the attacker and all that. When he says that fouling at close range, which has become an art form, really. I don't know how, as I said, I've always said that, I don't know how any referee could be expected to see it all. They just can't with the speed of the game.
Two referees cleaner.
I've always been there.
Paddy Meagan wasn't talking about it.
If we need three in basketball, we definitely need two in hurling at this stage. But it is interesting, isn't it, that it goes through the cyclical thing of saying, what's the change? Like, I remember when Cork went to that short passing game and, you know, won an All-Ireland with it, and there were people going, oh, for God's sake, not hurling at all.
Yeah.
You know.
It's trends. And
it is totally cyclical.
But even the stuff about, like, the helmets and concussions and things, like, that's a really progressive move. You know, there's a great line there, like, not wearing a helmet when it was discretionary was clearly more manly than wise. Like, you know, we're in that era now, there's more education about... Yeah. Concussions and head injuries and stuff like that, whereas back in the day it was like, get up, will you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get a little stumble and back into the line, you know.
Or you'd have the helmet on, or like a Brian Whelan style where you'd have it on and you'd have no strap on it.
Yes.
And like, you know, that was sort of a halfway house. I'm kind of wearing it, but I'm, you know.
Which was even more dangerous, they reckon, as well, because I got ear injuries.
Yeah. Yes,
right. And he also makes, Dermot Crowe also makes a point as well about, because I think wasn't it one of his, was Ben O'Connor saying this thing about, because there had been this notion for ages of, when they brought in these referee assessors, you know, because they were given marks for things, but he says actually that's changed in recent.
They don't have them.
They don't have the mark.
After
they
all,
have them. They have a. They'll submit.
Mentor.
A general report, but they don't give marks for, and they don't give percentages. That they got rid of that as well. So actually, that's not as tightly policed as some people.
And we've all spent the week talking about it without that bit of information.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting though? It is a cyclical thing. You see, I think it is, and managers develop styles of play, and then somebody figures out how to play against it, and then you go, the game takes a different direction. But isn't that what's wonderful about sport?
Claire were at it a few years ago as well with the passing game, and everyone was up in arms about it. But now I'm reading this next headline, right? Hope springs eternal in Mayo, writes Colm O'Rourke. Supporters of the Green and Red are a bit like some Christian minorities who practice self-flagellation. I'm reading that while also keeping an eye on the game in Letterkenny, where it's Donegal now, 21 points Mayo, 14 with 5 minutes to go. So I don't know if with the spring comes hope. But anyway, he says, in Mayo, spring always brings hope to every man, woman and child, and I never cease to be amazed by this phenomenon in Mayo. They take suffering as a high point of life. They're a bit like some Christian minorities who practice self-flagellation to repent for sins. Time to put away the whips, writes Colm O'Rourke. Start winning big games and enjoy it all today. That day is not today, I will point out. Cliona, you wanted to mention before we leave the GAA chat, Christy O'Connor's piece in the Sunday Times where he talks about rule changes helping young talents express themselves. The subheadline being, teams are throwing more players in at the deep end, and a number of them have been making an impact in a way that previous generations never could.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's just a development of this thing of when you change the rules, you tweak the rules, how does it affect a game? And we see that the discipline standards obviously are better in Gaelic football than they were, but also that it's given more, we know it's giving more freedom to forwards to express themselves and to develop their outside kicking. But also he's saying it's what's really been noticeable in the early parts of the league. Now you always have to allow for veterans not coming back, people being injured, all the rest. There's a lot of changes in teams at this time of the year. But over the last week, it's interesting that, you know, somebody like Ethan Jordan start for Tyrone, and he was one of their under 20 stars, and he went and he played a bit of soccer, and he said he's come back to GA now with more enthusiasm because he said I can express myself in the game now. I'm not playing against this. We'd be like to say there's low defensive block, you know, blanket defence or whatever it is. And so there was the same example of Dara Byrne. I saw Shane McGrath last night for Galway, the same. Yeah. Young forwards that we haven't seen before, new fellas coming in and making an impact and enjoying their football is a great thing to see.
There was a great quote there from Stephen Rochford, who coached and managed Mayo in 2005. The rules now allow you to play whatever game you want to play. That's great. That's what you want, isn't it?
Rather absolutely. Yeah. And even the quote from Jordan talking about fell out of love with football after leaving the 20s and was the way the game was going. It wasn't a forwards game, but now you get a real chance to express yourself. That's the nub of it, isn't it, really? And actually, it struck me this is an ageist piece. But what about the out lads and women? Every bit is open to these new rules. We want to mention Conor McKeown's piece in the Sunday Independent, Hold the Back Page, Skating on Very Thin Ice, and a photograph of the US figure skater Amber Glenn on the back page there. So we'll just summarise it and throw it open to Tina and Rory. It's a story in a lot of ways that's the introduction to other areas, but the story of Amber Glenn, who at 26, writes Conor McKeown, is the oldest US Olympic singles skater in nearly 100 years. She's also the first openly LGBTQ plus US female figure skating champion and first queer female skater to represent the US at an Olympics. She developed at a younger age an eating disorder. She talks about the treatment at her medal by her medal-obsessed coaches, where it felt like life or death. Things spiralled. She talks about the toxicity of it. The drugs didn't work, and Glenn spent some time at an inpatient psychiatric facility. So all of this is by way of getting into a conversation about, obviously, the writing about the Irish rowing system in those pages over the last number of months, but also about, like, you know, the pressure on Gaelic footballers. You know, talks about cricket, talks about long-term ramifications, concussion in rugby, and the invite now to the two of you to jump in wherever you want on this one. But the quote here being from Conor McKeown, sport and exercise are good for you. High performance can be hazardous.
Yeah, and I've often said it before, elite sports people are not always healthy. They may be really fit and may be brilliant at what they do, but they're not always healthy, either physically or mentally, because of the extremes that their sport goes to, and also because of the extremes their coaches sometimes go to, which shouldn't happen. But that's the nature of things. And Amber Glenn is kind of, she's the favourite for the women's figure skating next week, and she's kind of, but I have to say, watching the Winter Olympics, and I'm somebody who watches Ski Sunday, I'm a nerd for these kind of sports, but I was... Like, we're all guilty of hypocrisy on this, because, like, we lionise the bravery of it and we ignore the safety of it. And it's the same in rugby as it is in winter sports, but there's a very high degree of danger. And I watched both of the half pipe, the skateboard or the snowboard half pipes during the week. And the women's half pipe was a sensational final, but I mean, full of horrendous falls and terrifying things. I was looking through my fingers at one point, and it was one. This 17-year-old, Gwan Choi, came down, right? And she was up against the American who was going for three in a row, Chloe Kim. But she had the most... She landed on the lip on her first run in the final, right? 17-year-old. And all the headlines were motionless. Like, you were looking and thinking, oh, my God, they're going to have to bring... And, of course, the TV pans away from it. It goes as far away from it as possible. And she's lying in the middle of that big, huge U-shaped bend. And you're thinking, is she okay? And she got up and she came down and she was so hurt she couldn't undo her boots. And she went out and she fell on her second run, and on her third run she produced the gold medal performance and she won it. But what really freaked me out was, and people slagged them off, you know, Ed Lee and Tim Warwood, I don't know whether anybody's been listening to them, the two BBC commentators, and they come out with all the lingo and they're hilarious, but they also give you great insight, because I've looked at every report on this young girl winning the gold medal, and not one person has mentioned it, but Ed Lee said it 2 years ago, she broke her back Jeez. And she has 6 screws in it. And I looked up her World Cup results, and actually you see it, she only competed once in 2024. But I can't find any other record of that. And so even though we give out sometimes about kind of insider, you know, the people having been too close to a sport, sometimes those kind of commentators can give you great insight. And there I was thinking, oh my God, like, I'm here absorbed by this. But my God, that girl has put her body online, and she's only 17. How safe is that? How right is that? You know, teenagers do stuff, and it's why in those adventure sports, like, they do it because they don't have the same fear, and their bodies have ability to recover. But is it right? And is it right then to be looking at her and going, and you read all the headlines, she was a hero in Korea, and all the reports, The Athletic, all of them, none of them mentioned this thing about her breaking her back 2 years ago.
Well, you're saying,
and you suddenly think, I do wonder, and I have to critique myself, and I think probably all do, and say, you know, we look at them and we absorb the glory and everything, but sometimes you just don't think of what are the long term damage that's been done to these young bodies in those kind of sports. And the same in many sports, as we know now, even watching, you know, Super Bowl or whatever it is, the head injuries in rugby.
Limelight goes away, like, and they get older.
Yeah, that's when they're very young.
There needs to be, like, I've often felt there needs to be some sort of a UN of sport where they can have the ability to step in and deal with stuff like that's going on that we mentioned earlier on.
Yeah.
With the obvious stuff maybe around, like, sort of the bigger picture things around the rights and wrongs of playing in a country or not.
What age is it appropriate to do? Well, in gymnastics, like, they brought in the rule that you had to be 16. Yeah. You had to be plus 16. But, like, it's so funny, like, a brilliant writer, if anybody wants to read a book of Joan Ryan, Little Girls in Pretty Boxes, it came out in 1995. She's a hero of mine, an American sports writer. And she wrote this book about gymnastics and ice skating and what they were doing to young girls' bodies. And at the time, as a result of that, America brought in a kind of a safe sports thing. And yet we still had that horrendous sex scandal in American gymnastics with Larry Nassar, who abused, you know, 300 plus.
Well, these bodies just prove time and time again that they have an inability to govern themselves.
No. So it needs to be done by.
But
you
do,
you feel like a hypocrite, because I was glued to it, absolutely glued to it. And then I thought, oh my God. Like, when you saw her recover, you thought, my God, how brave is she? That's amazing what she's done. But then you hear she broke her back, and she must have been 15 when she broke her back.
Shocking.
You're thinking, 6 screws in your back, and you're coming down doing these death-defying things, you know. You do wonder sometimes. Yeah. I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, because I get absorbed in the thrill of it and the bravery of it and everything. But when you sit back and think long-term, you wonder. And you know, we add to that hypocrisy, I suppose, by glorifying those kind of victories sometimes.
Yeah.
I just thought the thing that jumped out at me was just in the wake of Paul Kimmage's investigation into the rowing. Mm. And he said, you know, Paul Gaffney, the lead consultant in high performance sport, like, he revealed in early 2024 he was treating 12 current and former athletes. And Connor, in the next paragraph, caveats this with, you know, rowing is a brutal sport, like choosing to go coal mining 6 times a week is a hobby. And at the end, it's like, you know, it's basically, you know, if there's a woke snowflake generation, it ain't our Olympic rowers. You know, like, they're the hardest, toughest, mentally strong people, and if they're kind of putting hands up going, like, we're getting put through the mill here and we're getting kind of ground down psychologically, it's probably time to be listening to them, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things you're saying, that thing about, you know, having an independent body, like, what has been missing, there's no doubt, and rowing have the problems in Irish rowing, and Paul Kimmage's study has exposed that, which is there should be an independent body where athletes can go to and raise their complaints. Sport Ireland didn't act on their complaints because they said, oh, it's not our area, we're the statutory body, but we can't interfere. And so it continued. But I think Evanna Quillen raised it in the Senate as well, as there needs to be at least an independent body to investigate complaints
and
that
sports,
athletes can go
sports
to.
Sports themselves and governments should feed into some sort of a fund that allows something like that to be established.
They should all fund it.
You know,
right.
Like, if, you know, it's just been long proven that, like, and in this country, no more than any other country, like, that there's just an inability for them to make the right decisions around things like that. Benjamin Nygren has put Celtic level at Kilmarnock. 2-2 now, 20 minutes to win it. The Ox is on, and we shall see if he can pull out some more heroics like he did a couple of days back from a Celtic point of view and keep that title race very much alive from a Celtic point of view as they defend their own line. But 2-2, 20 minutes to go. We'll just, I know you wanted to point people, Tlina, finally in the direction of Martin Samuel, the voice of sport. We know why the Forest fans love Marinakis, but even so, this is nuts.
Yeah, it's good. It's just a good, very good read. It's like, you know, four managers in one season. Yeah, how crazy can you be, and how crazy can you be to expect that to continue, and how much power can you give to a manager? And he's saying, like, even the next guy who's coming in, how is he going to even have a philosophy about they're going to out to play, because they've had three managers who all played differently and they still got fired and the results still didn't happen.
Well, this is the way it's a really good
sacking
your manager.
It's just bizarre.
They'll get it right eventually. Yeah.
Well, any other pieces that you want to mention before we wrap? Are happy enough?
I think so,
Sinead.
Righto, Rory Keane, Mail on Sunday, Irish Daily Mail. Thanks a million. Enjoyed that. Tlina Foley, thank you very much.
Thanks, Adrian.
Very enjoyable last hour and a half. That is it for the Sunday paper review today. We've lots of live sport ongoing. JD back in the hot seat after these.
The Sunday paper review on Off the Ball.
With Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the IRFU.
This is News Talk.